This is Rabbi Mann. We're continuing with the Shnayim Mikra, and we're up to Shishi, the sixth Aliyah. And this begins on chapter 16, verse 11, to the end of that chapter, which is verse 36. So it's a lengthy narrative describing the phenomenon of the mun and the manna and the slav, meaning the quail. But the main focus, of course, is on the mun. There's a significant difference, although God provided them with two kinds of foods, but there's a clear difference between the mun and the quail. It begins by telling us that God is responding to the complaints, and this is the arrangement, the so-called table in the wilderness. That is that in the evening you'll be provided with the meat. So the quail only came in the evening, and the mun, which is the manna, would come in the morning. So it describes the fact that the manna came with the dew. It was something that was very, very thin as frost. And to bolster this point, that it was not any kind of a known food, it says when the Jews saw it, they that's the name mun. They gave it the name mun because they didn't know what it was. Rashi says the term mun is hachanas mazon. It's just something prepared, something which is prepared to be eaten, because they couldn't give it any name. It was something completely different than anything they'd experienced. And then Moshe explained to them, that's the bread. It's interesting that the mun, which is so thin and seemingly flimsy, is referred to as bread. It's always referred to as bread that God has given you. But the mun comes with a series of instructions attached to it, as opposed to the slav, which doesn't seem that there's any kinds of rules and regulations. There are very significant rules and regulations applying to the mun, that each person should collect every day. They have to go out and collect the mun every day. And the amount is stated, an omer for each person, which is a certain measure that was utilized in those days. And that they were supposed to take that amount for each person in their family. Then it goes on to describe in verses 17 and 18 that the Jews went out and gathered. And there were those who gathered more and those who gathered less. And this seems to be an additional miracle, that when it came time to measuring it in accordance with that omer, the one who gathered more didn't have more, and the one who gathered less didn't have less, and each person had the correct amount. And Rashi explains that that was an additional miracle. There were a number of miracles that were associated with the mun. Now, another important instruction is then given, that they were not permitted to leave over, to hoard, to leave over anything for the next day. They had to consume everything on that day and then go out the next day and collect again. However, there were Jews that didn't listen. And there were some people that left over. That food that they left over was spoiled, became infested with worms and smelled. It was spoiled. That's another miracle. Then it tells us that the time of there was a specific time when they would collect it, would be in the morning, and then when the sun would come out, it would melt, so it would be gone. Then it says that on the sixth day, however, they collected a double portion. According to Rashi, it means that they, on the sixth day, they collected the usual portion, and when they counted it against the Omer, they discovered that they had a double portion. So that was an additional miracle. And then they didn't understand what the reason was. So they came, the princes, the leaders of the people, came and told this to Moshe. And Moshe explained to them that this has to do with the Shabbos. That's the will of Hashem. That the seventh day is a Shabbos, a Sabbath to Hashem. And thus, he's instructing them to prepare for the Shabbos, to bake that which is to be baked, and to cook that which is to be cooked, and the extra to put aside and guard it as a safekeeping until morning. So here you have an exception to the basic rule. The basic rule is that each day, if they try to do that, to leave over a portion for the next day, it would spoil. But on Friday, to the contrary, they were instructed to leave over a portion, and it didn't spoil. And the Pasuk tells you in verse 24 that they left it over until the morning, as Moshe commanded, and it did not become infested, nor did it stink. And then Moshe said, eat it on this day, because this day is Shabbos unto Hashem, and today you are not to go out and gather it in the field. Then it says that there were people who went out on the seventh day to collect, and they didn't find. And then from Pasuk 28, we have the reaction of Hashem. Hashem expresses anger. For how long will they refuse to observe my commandments? See that Hashem has given you the Shabbos. And that's the reason why he gives you, on the sixth day, bread for 2 days. Each person is supposed to remain in his place. And nobody should go out from his place on the seventh day. It should be noted there are many important halachos pertaining to Shabbos that are learned from these verses. For example, the prohibition of boundaries, not to travel great distances on Shabbos. Except we're not really going into that at this point. And it says that the people rested on the seventh day. And it goes on to say that they called it mun, and it was like a coriander seed. It was white and tasted like a cake fried in honey. The rest of the parsha is about the fact that Hashem issues another command, and that is that they were supposed to preserve, to set aside an omer of the mun as a safekeeping for the generations. That is to say, that it should be preserved. So they took a jar, a special vessel, and placed the mun in it in order that future generations would see it. They would see the bread that God fed them in the wilderness when he took them out of Egypt. And then it says that they carried out that command, and Aaron placed it. Of course, it's a reference to when the Mishkan was built. Rashi says that it's being mentioned over here, but in point of fact, it was placed in front of the Aron, the ark in which the tablets were deposited in the Mishkan, and subsequently in the Beis HaMikdash, in the temple. Then it goes on, it concludes this by saying that the Bnei Yisrael, the Jews, ate the man for 40 years until they came to the land of settlement. It concludes by telling you the measure. The omer is a tenth of an ephah, which is a biblical measure. I'd like to just review some of the ideas associated with the man. As I said, there's a difference between the man and the slav. The slav is not given significant treatment. Indeed, it seems that this is just a concession, that the ideal situation would have been that the Jews would have been sustained purely by the man. And there's many statements that the request for man was appropriate because one person needs food. But the request for the quail was inappropriate, because that was basically for lust. That represents lust and desire, the meat. And that's why there are no halachos, there are no mitzvos connected to it. And that's why, in my opinion, it's in the evening. That is where it's difficult to go out. And it's teaching us an idea. The man was provided with a goodly countenance, so to speak, quote unquote. That is, that God provided with happiness. And it was with dignity. They went out. It was daytime. It was light. It wasn't that difficult to find. It was covered by the dew. And all of these things, the appearance, it had this beautiful appearance, because that was something which was appropriate. But the Slav was inappropriate and essentially was just a concession to lust. And that's, if a person follows that pathway, he's going to have difficulties in life. The more of the unnecessaries person pursues, most of the things that people pursue are unnecessaries, purely in the imagination. And that's what gets you into trouble. That's the night. You have to go out at a time. It's not comfortable. It's dark. It's difficult, and so on and so forth. It's communicating that idea. But I want to focus with regard to the man on at the end of the parsha. That it's interesting, the command to actually set aside physically a sample of the man, and it should be there, so the Jews could actually see it. So that's very unique. It's not enough that they'll know about it. If they study the Torah, they'll know about the man. Why do you actually have to see it? So there's a Rashi on that says that in the days of Yirmiyahu, that the prophet Jeremiah would rebuke them, that they weren't involved in the study of Torah. They were lax in the study of Torah. And then they responded and said, how can we abandon our work and be involved in learning? Where are we going to get parnasa? Where are we going to get sustenance from? So that's a very familiar refrain to this day. People imagine that they don't have enough time to learn. Well, they feel they can't learn because, well, how can I learn? I have to be involved in my business. And apparently, that's not necessarily correct. And he took out for them, that's when he took out the jar of the man, and he said, you see the word of Hashem. See the word of Hashem. Shimu lo nemar. He didn't say listen, he said see. Take a look. With this, your fathers were sustained. Harba shluchim yesh olamakam. God has many, many messengers. God has many, many ways to provide food for those who fear Him. So the man was not just about the sustenance. The man reflects the whole philosophy of life, the lifestyle of the Jew. And it's interesting to note also that it's referred to as bread. And Moshe says, when He gives you bread, lisboa, to satisfaction, to satiation. But when it refers to the quail, it says He'll give you quail to eat, but it never mentions the term satisfaction with regard to the quail. And I think it fits into the whole idea. To the contrary, the meat, the person thinks meat's going to satisfy me. That's substantial. People like to eat meat. But the man wasn't even real bread. It was like this wafer. And it doesn't seem to be the kind of thing that's going to satisfy a person. But that's because a person has the wrong idea of satisfaction. The man was associated with Torah. The mitzvos, when it says, I will test them to see whether they will walk in my Torah, so Rashi says, mitzvos hatlios bo, the mitzvos that are connected to it. And that's the whole essence of the Jewish idea of how a person should live his life. If a person lives his life with modesty, with discipline, with control, not to gorge himself. That's the alien hedonistic philosophy that seeks to create satisfaction by endless gorging of the instincts, of the appetites. And that's another statement of the rabbis, that with regard to the desires, that if a person seeks to satiate himself, then he goes hungry. If he starves it, so then he's satisfied. Which means to say that the real satisfaction in life is the satisfaction of the soul. Of course one needs food, but the food is just a means. And if a person has what he needs, he satisfies his basic needs, and then he directs his energies towards the involvement in learning and knowledge, ideas and justice, in good deeds, that provides the true satisfaction. And this was the training. The man was really the training ground for the Jews in the wilderness. And they had to recognize this philosophy that that's the way Hashem governs the world. This is not just an idea, but it's a fundamental of the manner in which God manifests himself. And it's, we say that in the Birkat HaMazon, in the grace after meals, Lo Reisi Tzadik Nezav, that a tzadik, a righteous person, is not abandoned. That if a person directs himself to living a life which is based upon the pursuit of Hashem. Now, it's true, he has to engage in labor. He doesn't have a right to say, well, God will take care of me. He has to engage in labor. And the Jews had to engage in labor. They had to go out every day and they had to collect. And the idea that they did not spend any time hoarding, and anything that they hoarded would spoil, is a very, very profound lesson. Because people are engaged in pursuit of the unnecessaries. And we see today, millionaires, nothing. You have mega millionaires and billionaires. And people spend their entire lives seeking to build up more and more and more. And all of this is spoiled. Where does it go to? They'll never spend it themselves. So what's the point of accumulating it? And they can't even control how it's going to get spent. People would turn over in their graves. Because then you have others that inherit it, and no one has any control over it, and who it finally winds up with, and in what hands, and how it's spent. So it turns out that all of the labor that these people labored and expended all their energies was for naught. And you see that clearly in the idea that when the Jews lacked faith in Hashem, and they felt that the only way they could survive, they had to give in to that emotion of that security. That emotion, there's a reasonable idea of security, but it's the crazy idea that a person never has enough. Always has to have more, more, more. In the course of doing that, one sacrifices one's life. And if the person were to live a life which was modeled after acquiring what he needs within reason, not every Judaism doesn't affirm asceticism. A person has real needs. The Rambam talks about that. You shouldn't go to the extreme of deprivation, but it should be something which you need, which is realistic. Beyond that, it's just excess, because you have to keep up a certain image. If a person would do that, he would find that life is not as difficult as it appears, and he would find the parnasa. Hashem would show him a way. He would find that's the harbor shluchim. That's what Jeremiah was telling them. You have the opportunity to engage in Parnassah, and that doesn't mean that you have to give up Torah. You still can find the time for Torah. And I know many, many people who do that, who choose a certain profession, which gives them a certain amount of freedom, and they have that discipline, they have that faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that since they're using what He has given them to serve Him, and that's the purpose of the creation, God will work it out for them so that they'll be able to learn more and more and more. That's the basic ideas of the man, and it's reflected that every day, that miracle, that every day, if they sought to go beyond what they needed and to get involved in the realm of more, it spoiled. That was to teach them that lesson. But on Friday they set aside more for the Shabbos. That didn't, because that was a different kind of, that was a more for the sake of serving God. That wasn't the more for the sake of giving in to their lusts and to their insecurities. A person may have insecurities, but the only way to cure himself of those insecurities is to recognize that everything comes from Hashem, and that we come under the protection of divine providence when we're acting and molding our lives in accordance with the will of Hashem. So, to the contrary, That's the whole idea of Shabbos, is that expression of faith that we don't do any work at all. Not just that we don't work, but we're supposed to take our minds off of our concerns, our weekday concerns. A person shouldn't sit around on Shabbos worrying and talking about his business affairs. And that's not fulfilling the whole purpose. The purpose is that he should be completely, a day of complete withdrawal from his concerns, preoccupation with the physical, and devote all your energies to the service of Hashem, and not just the service, but the oneg. It's teaching us the great joy that a person has when he molds and governs his life in accordance with these principles. That's why the man is referred to as the bread, the staff of life. And the Torah always uses the expression lispoa. It's only through the philosophy of life that's contained in the man that a person can achieve true satisfaction of the soul. But if he pursues the philosophy of life, which is reflected in the quail, which is lust, which is pursuing all the desires, then that's in the evening. That leads to darkness.